And now, welcome to Who's Talking with D.G. Martin. Who's Talking, featuring interesting guests from our community on News Talk 1360 WCATL. Now, here is D.G. Martin.
Welcome to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. One of North Carolina's history legends is Professor William Powell, whose books about North Carolina history are classics. One of his favorite books is the North Carolina Gazetteer, which has been popular and in print for more than 40 years since its first publication. Professor Powell collected entries for many years in his famous card catalog, just developing as complete as possible a list of creeks, roads, towns, settlements, now or formerly. And a lot of people would just carry that book around with them in their car to when they ran into a place. They would look it up in Professor Powell's book and find out a little short entry about its background. Well, that book needed to be revised, and our guest is the reviser of Professor Powell's book, Michael Hill, who is a prominent personage in North Carolina history himself, works over at Archives and History, compiles, first of all, Michael Hill, welcome.
Thank you, D.G. Glad to be here.
Your similarly popular book, for those of us who like to cruise along the road and read the road signs and try to figure out where they are, you've compiled,
yes,
I think, a complete list.
And
I guess it can never be complete because there's always a new one.
That's right. The State Marker Program, Highway Historical Markers. And, in fact, in that respect, I also followed Professor Powell. As a young man, Bill Powell worked at Archives of History for about 4 years. He met Virginia while he was there. She was a Meredith student, and they've been together since that time. At any rate, Bill Powell, after World War II, after the metal shortage had ended, restrictions on use of metal, they started the program again in 47, and he worked there until the early 50s. And so he had a hand in the marker program, which is the marker program this year in its 75th year. That program started in 1935, and we have over 1,500 signs. But that's the great pleasure of my job in Raleigh, is working with the marker program. It's a chance to meet people across the state, get to travel, and you get a different topic every day.
So you're sort of the Bill Powell was the first modern godfather of that program, and you're his successor.
There were other folks, Jerry Cashin, and then the original father of the program, Chris Crittenden. But there were Lib Wilburn. There were other people involved, and then there are folks in my office now, Ansel Wegner, Josh Howard. So we have many people's hands in it, but it's a pleasure to work with that program. We also work with DOT on erecting the markers. So through that program, I'd say I had some familiarity with the state's place names and with its geography. It's worth pointing out that today, a lot of folks' first inclination is to turn to a resource such as Google Maps or Google Earth. That is, you can find place names, hone right in on them, zero in on them. In fact, through the marker program's website, ncmarkers.com, we have installed a Google Earth feature on that website. And I've been working on that, in fact, just this week, to enable the user of that website to find where all 1,500 signs are and to go right down to the point where the sign stands.
Wow. So that combination of programs and you're using the programs available, the computer programs available in Archives and History, combined with the resources of Google Maps, you can type in the marker and get right there and see it on the ground almost.
The marker program, exactly. In fact, with Google, a lot of folks that use Google Earth would know that you have Street View with Google as well, which will enable you to look at the landmarks, the shopping centers.
So you might be able to read the
marker. You can actually see the markers along the side of the road in many of these views. So that while not directly connected to the Gazetteer, I think when the editors at UNC Press and Bill Powell had the idea to do a new edition, I was one of the people that they thought of as maybe a prospect to do it. And I readily agreed. I found it a great pleasure to work on. Now, I worked on this new Gazetteer for 18 months. Bill Powell worked on it for 18 years. So this book is really still Professor Powell's book. He gets the primary credit for it. It now has about 21,000 entries in the Gazetteer, and I only added about 1,200 of those. Bill did the great work on it.
I want to talk about the process that you went through to update it, and maybe even go back in history and talk about Professor Powell's process. But more than the process, I'm interested in the stories of the new sites that you found, or the old sites that you sort of developed a relationship with.
Sure.
What? Tell us about some of the interesting names of North Carolina places.
I will. The one most obvious, the one that occurred to me right away that I knew was not in the gazetteer, but everyone around here knows about it and knows it belongs there, is Jordan Lake. When the original gazetteer was done in 1968, there was not Jordan Lake. They had started construction on what was called, for the time being, New Hope Lake, but it was named for Senator B. Everett Jordan in the 70s, and so the book did not have an entry for Jordan Lake. So that was an easy one. That was an easy decision.
Well, you didn't have a hard time finding Jordan Lake. You might have had a hard time determining how to briefly describe it, because there's so much you could say about it.
Yeah, exactly. As with every other entry in the gazetteer, being concise is a virtue. Now, that's also true of the markers along the highway. The tradition in North Carolina has been to be concise, and in fact, to the point of almost, well, they're about the same length as a tweet, as it happens,
mm-hmm.
about 140 characters. That's what you find on the markers along the highway. The entries in the gazetteer are, I would say the average one's a bit longer than 140 characters, but still they're short, and so we aim to be very concise with them. In addition to an entry like Jordan Lake, I had to update the book with respect to communities that have since 68 been incorporated. Changes in the industrial makeup of the state. Now here was one of the greatest challenges for me, and one which I'm afraid I supplied incomplete answers. That is where textiles remains a primary component of the economy. Now when the gazetteer came out in 68, you found textiles associated with hundreds of communities mm-hmm. in North Carolina. And, of course, since 68, that situation has changed.
Well, I was interested in this, Michael, picked up on in looking at the entry for Durham, for instance. In the late 1960s, at the time Professor Powell published the first edition, Durham was still a tobacco town in many respects, and almost primarily and certainly identified as a tobacco town. By the time you get to current times, you have to write an entry that salutes its tobacco history but takes account of its complete transformation into the
digital. Exactly. Pharmaceuticals, I know, would venture to say, I know they call it Durham, the City of Medicine. I live in Durham. They call it Durham, City of Medicine, but pharmaceuticals is in addition to health affairs at Duke and so on, pharmaceutical manufacture, of course, a big part of the economy in Durham, computers, software, et cetera. So yeah, Durham's economy has really been transformed since then. But, of course, it is part of the history of Durham, so you'd want that to be reflected as well in a brief, concise entry.
Same thing with Chapel Hill. Maybe it's easier. Chapel Hill remains primarily a university town, but it's no longer a village and has a whole lot more going on. And the other thing is, as these towns grow, they absorb and obliterate communities that were identified as
exactly. I like to call those suburban swallow-ups. And you find lots of those through the Triangle. An example here locally that I would mention is Nelson.
Don't even know what Nelson is.
Well, Highway 54 out by Farrington Road and out that uh-huh. way used to be called the Nelson Highway. And on some older maps, you can find it identified as the Nelson Highway. Nelson was out just beyond Nortel in the Research Triangle Park, where the road makes a sharp turn to the right and goes to
mm-hmm.
Morrisville.
Mm-hmm.
That was the Nelson community. And before the RTP, Nelson was the name of that community. Now, Nelson appears in the gazetteer. And my great interest and pride in adding things to the gazetteer was to find those place names that have disappeared from our maps, all evidence maybe is gone. Now, there's a little bit left of Nelson. There's some shopping centers, some churches, and so on out there. But there are other places which are gone entirely. And you had about 100 years ago a heyday for small communities. I mean, North Carolina's grown so much since World War II that you have urban centers like the Triangle, the Triad, Metro Charlotte, and so on. But in The period, say, from 1880 to 1930, you had a heyday for small communities. One reason for that is the proliferation of post offices. Now, in doing the gazetteer, Bill Powell faced in 68 the same challenge I did in trying to decide which post offices to include, because over all of North Carolina history, there have been 60,000 post offices.
Is that right?
There have been. Well, now, this book has a little over 20,000 entries, so we weren't going to put all 60,000 post offices in the book. But he had a good selection of them when he did the first edition, and I went back to the post office records, which now can be consulted in a modern four-volume edition compiled by the North Carolina Postal History Society, and I'm very obligated to those folks because they did that tedious work of going to the microfilm, writing down the name of each post office, when it operated, when it closed, where they transferred the mail, who the postmasters were. That's the basics on each post office operation. So I drew upon that. I couldn't put in all 60,000, but I drew out a goodly number and found some of the more interesting names, and then matched those up against with some period maps. Now, the combination of the post office records and the historic maps enabled me to add a number of interesting new entries.
Well, give us an illustration of
okay.
Interesting enough for a post office that's no longer in existence,
yep.
Can't even find it, interesting enough to put in your book.
Well,
you're in Professor Powell's book.
There's a pair of post offices in Moore County. One is called Noise and one is called Quiet. And this came about in the 1870s and 1880s. I believe 1878, a place called Quiet was established in Moore County. Not surprising. That's when Moore County was beginning to get a reputation as a center for tourists, for golf. And there was, in fact, a Moore County post office called Tempting. But anyway, one group of folks started a small post office, small community called Quiet. And about 4 years later, 10 miles away, folks started a post office called Noise. So Noise and Quiet. They're no longer there on the map. Maybe we'd have some listeners that have some familiarity with Moore County who maybe there is some local knowledge of this. But I was able to confirm it, not through those post office records and through a really important resource that I cite in the book called Mangum's, D.C. Mangum's 1901 Historical Compendium and Gazetteer of North Carolina. So, Bill Powell was not the first to create a gazetteer. That's a classic old word with origins in the British Isles, a guide to place names. D.C. Mangum, way back, he was from Durham, and he created this very fine, large map, which in 1901, it was a different color for each county, a classic map, about this, a good size, I'd say about 3 feet by 5 feet. It was the kind of map that you would find hanging back in that day on school walls, in depots, in public buildings. That map was a great resource to me. I could match up from the post office records, match them against the Mangum map. It's published by Rand McNally, so it got a considerable distribution. And it had Noise and Quiet, and it had hundreds of other communities. So from that, I drew about 600 entries that weren't in the original gazetteer that I found interesting. I didn't necessarily get as much detail as Bill Powell might have gotten on them, but at least I could sketch the bare outlines.
So we're visiting with Michael Hill, who is the editor and colleague of Professor William Powell in updating Professor Powell's book, The North Carolina Gazetteer. It's now the North Carolina Gazetteer second edition. Michael Hill and I will take a break and we'll be right back.
You're listening to Who's Talking on News Talk 1360 WCHL with your host, D.G. Martin. And now, once again, here's D.G.
Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. My guest is Michael Hill. We're talking about the North Carolina Gazetteer. Many of people who listen to this program are fans, already fans of the Gazetteer, because From the time Professor Powell and UNC Press published it in the late 1960s, it's been in the glove compartment of compartments or by the side of desk of people who love North Carolina, because when they hear of a funny place, a strange place, they look it up, or if to see if Professor Powell found it and find out some information about it. Or for some cases, Michael Hill, I bet you some of us just kind of like to open it up and read it, because we learn things and the names of places that we never had heard of before.
I think the first inclination of somebody who just first encounters the book is to, particularly if they're from North Carolina, is to look at place names they knew of back home. Now, I'm from Henderson County, and I knew that when Bill Powell worked on it originally, he had the assistance of a local historian named Sadie Patton. She wrote the history, the classic history of Henderson County, and she was a great help to him in covering the place names. Tumblebug Creek, for example, which is where near where my father and brother live. Big Hungry Creek. We've got some good place names up in Henderson County. So those were already in the book. But in talking to my dad, who's 87, he tuned me in to some other local place names that he knew of that belonged in the book. So though I didn't credit my dad, unfortunately, in the book, but he was a great resource to me in placing local Henderson County names in the book, ones that had gotten missing first time.
Tell us about some of the other missing find, or some ones that were missing in the gazetteer that you found that were like these great names, just to illustrate some of the names that we'll find when we look in the gazetteer.
Well, I think one way of approaching it, Bill Powell, and I call him Professor Powell, Bill Powell. For years, I was reluctant to call him that because he was my advisor in grad school. I had his North Carolina history course. He long asked me to call him Bill, and ultimately, after knowing him for all these years, I got comfortable with that. But
I have to still call him Professor Powell.
Yeah, Professor Powell. He, of course, is not a PhD. He has some honorary doctorates, but I can't say enough in paying tribute to what he did over his lifetime. He's 91 now, still lives in retirement here in Chapel Hill. And at any rate, he covered so many place names in the original edition with the help of his local contacts. Now, he had a contact in every county, all 100 counties. He credits them all in the front of the book. So he really did some groundwork in placing that. And just thumbing through the book, on any page of the 600 pages or so, you'll find entries that would be of interest here. One here that I know I added to, I think it was in the original, but this is near where I grew up in Henderson County, and it's a classic name. It's called the Narrows, and folks locally call it the Nars, but it's the Narrows, and that's a section of the Green River where it comes down to a very tight passageway between rocks. It's been written up in the State Magazine. There was a very nice photograph within the past year of the Nars, or the Narrows, of the Green River. And I added a line to the original entry. Here's the entry. It's short. Section of Green River in East Henderson County where rocks narrow to tight passageway, favored by kayakers despite access difficulties. So now that could practically be short enough to be on one of these state markers. If we did geographical features, I'd say the Narrows might be one that we would consider. It doesn't have the historical significance we do for a marker, but at least that concise description of what constitutes the Narrows is an example of what we can put in the gazetteer and what will lead people to discover more about North Carolina and its features.
A lot of the entries have animal names associated with them. In some cases, animals that we don't see any that we don't see anymore, like buffalo.
Sure.
A lot of buffalo entries.
Buffalo, a bobcat, wildcat, eagles. Yeah, there's a ton of animal names. In fact, I think that this book can and will prove to be an assist to folks doing studies in different disciplines, from folklore to biology to botany.
How's that? How does that work?
I think you take place names and you spot these out. Say, take these buffalo names that are in here, and create a map. Place them on a map of North Carolina, and you'd have a very good indication of where settlers commonly saw buffaloes and saw fit to name their places, creeks, mountains, peaks, for that animal or that place name. So I didn't do that, but I think this book would prove a resource to folks who might like to.
We're developing the capabilities so that electronically our successors will be able to press a button and throw these place names up on a map using the facilities that will be available for them, at least even on your work, at least in the general area of the county.
Now, as the availability of this book, it has been available through library resources, through something called eLibrary. Its old edition was available in that fashion. I don't know that there are plans, at least in the short term, to market this new edition through electronic means. That is, I know UNC Press is interested in selling these books, and so I think for the short term they would distribute it primarily as paper copy. But I think long term it might be incorporated into some other digital projects.
We're visiting with Michael Hill. Michael Hill is the editor of the second edition of the North Carolina Gazetteer, professor, our neighbor professor Bill Powell's, one of his classic contributions to North Carolina history. Michael Hill, and I'll be right back.
You're listening to Who's Talking on News Talk 1360 WCHL with your host, D.G. Martin. And now, once again, here's D.G.
Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. My guest is Michael Hill. We're talking about the North Carolina Gazetteer second edition. First edition published, 40 years ago, more than that, compiled by Professor William Powell, a North Carolina history legend, and now updated by his friend and colleague. Bill Powell was your mentor, Michael Hill, but you've done the job, which I bet he really appreciates, of making his classic even more valuable.
Yes, when we had our first meetings at UNC Press's offices to discuss me taking this on, I met with him in Virginia. Virginia's been a help to him on all his projects, and so they had kept notes. Corrections. You gave me a correction just when we came in here. But they had kept notes they had received since 1968.
So they'd kept the copies. I mean, when you do a project like this, you know you're going to get corrections and additions. So they'd kept all of these notes.
Envelopes. Several manila envelopes filled with letters received, clippings, and so on. Now, the original notes and note cards that went into the making of this book, those are in the Southern Historical Collection. Bill Powell has deposited working materials in that collection for many years. So it was fascinating to see what his system was in his original work on this book back in
what was
he began
it?
In the 50s.
What was his system?
He began in the 50s. He was inspired by a wire service story about a plane crash. It datelined a community in eastern North Carolina that he did not know. He, already becoming Mr. North Carolina, he did not know that place name. He searched several maps, couldn't find it. And so he decided, dang it, we need a North Carolina Gazetteer. So he, from that point, decided to start compiling note cards, and it grew from that. And as I say, he spent about 18 years working on it. And this was pre-computers. He did it on 3x5 cards. He established these local contacts in all 100 counties that I mentioned. And back in that pre-computer, pre-email day, he would take his note cards for, say, Duplin County and mail them to someone, put them in a box and mail them via the U.S. Postal Service to a party down in Duplin County who had volunteered to check and add to his cards. So those cards are still available in the library.
So with handwritten notes maybe from people in Duplin County, this is I apologize for interrupting you, but this is one of the things that's impressed me about Bill Powell all along. And that is, while there are different traditions of scholarship and of developing resources for others, and one of the traditions is that you're a scholar and you get down and you do it all by yourself and you do the research and you come up with your project and then you take full credit for it. The other is kind of lassoing a whole group of people into a project. And not only do you gain the benefit of their expertise and you welcome their corrections and you say, tell me where I'm wrong, help me, but that you you develop a cadre of people who are
exactly.
interested in history.
Exactly. And Professor Powell benefited from that as he pursued future projects. That is, what he has created and what he will be leaving us as a legacy are these foundation works of North Carolina history. Now, there are scholars, many scholars, to their credit, do fine work as monographs, digging deep on
the subject.
Right. But what Professor Powell did, now he did some of that too. He did some great scholarly work on the Roanoke colonies, and he's written county histories and so on. He's written about 40 books ago, so gosh, he's done lots of stuff. But his three principal works start with The Gazetteer, Guide to Place Names. Then there's the Dictionary of North Carolina Biography, about 4,000 North Carolinians profiled in 6-volume work, and most recently his Encyclopedia of North Carolina, which is covers the other things. So you've got places, people, and things. He did the trifecta essentially, and so he was in his 90s or in his late 80s when the Encyclopedia came out. So he devoted his entire life to doing this public work. That is, he was a scholar, he was a librarian, he was a teacher of history at the university, but he also did this great public work and left this great contribution.
Well, it is great, and again, just the idea of the, you think of the number of people that he has brought into the history preserving and collecting and appreciating community. That by saying, help me with this project, would you help me with this project? Would you check this? Would you write a short article mm-hmm. for me? And so in some respects, monitoring the work of others and collecting it and riding herd on that is a lot harder in some respects than just doing it yourself.
Yeah, exactly. And he gives credit to the folks. Here in the Gazetteer, they're in the front of the book, but in the Dictionary of North Carolina Biography and in the Encyclopedia, the person responsible is credited at the end of the entry. Now, in updating the Gazetteer, the challenge I faced was to, well, somewhat follow in his footsteps and try to establish some local contacts. And despite the fact I've worked in public history for over 25 years in Raleigh, I don't know someone in every county. I've mm-hmm. been to every county, as I'm sure you have, DG, but I don't have a good history contact in every county as Bill did. So I chose, being in the modern age, to go through email and listservs and to put the call out for contributions to the new edition. That reached librarians and local historians primarily. And two folks who contributed to the original edition contributed to the new edition. That is, with passage time, actually three. Jim Wall in Davie County, historian up there, a longtime eighth grade history teacher. David Stick, now deceased, unfortunately, but David Stick and the Outer Banks gave me about 12 pages of new material.
My golly.
About just Dare County. And lastly, H.G. Jones here in Chapel Hill.
Of course.
He had assisted on Caswell, his home Caswell County, and others, and he gave me some help on the new edition. So those three folks, all up in senior citizens, but they all were a help to me in getting new entries.
Well, all heroes of North Carolina history. I'm curious about your work methodology and how, if at all, the new modern technological capabilities were of assistance to you. Mentioned that Professor Powell just simply kept note cards, and I
right.
assume kept them first by counties, and then when it was time to write the book, he shuffled them into alphabetical order.
That's right.
What did you do?
Okay. Well, Bill, to finish about Bill Powell's technique, he and Virginia put it all in the order in the note cards, and then it was a tremendous typesetting challenge. It was typeset by hand by a retired typesetter in Durham. And that's how the new edition, the first edition came out in 68.
It's hard for us to even imagine how tough it was to get something printed. And you either had to, I mean, either a linotype machine
yep.
or setting it out, you know.
Yep. The first edition was done by hand like that. The new edition, I can tell you the process I went through. When I agreed to do it, the editors at the press provided me with a laptop and a... installed on that laptop was the full contents of the old edition in a program called FileMaker Pro. which is a database program which would enable me to move about and add and so on, make corrections. It would also flag those entries for the editors to do closer checks on. That program also changed the alphabetization of the gazetteer. The gazetteer has long been word-by-word alphabetized, and the other, and I would say more regularly used, is letter-by-letter alphabetization.
What's the difference?
Well, there is a difference. You have to look closely, for example, at, here's an entry, Pigeon River, two words, and then right after it, Pigeon Roost, one word. In word by word, you do Pigeon River first, because mm-hmm. Pigeon stands alone, and so all the pigeon entries, all the buffalo entries, etc., would come. So Pigeon River, and then Pigeon Roost after. So there's that difference. It depends on what follows the word. So we had that challenge with the laptop. It wanted to reverse the alphabetization, but with the help of the editors, we got it all straightened out, and it adheres to the original scheme of the first gazetteer.
I just interrupt you because this is so totally off the point that I apologize, but I asked you the question about the different ways to alphabetize, and in that connection, when I wrote a column related to your book, I had spelled Northampton as two words, Northampton, and so fortunately, I sent my work to not just to my regular editor, my wife, but I sent it to somebody who knew something about North Carolina history, and he wrote back in shock that I didn't remember that Northampton was one word, and so would be alphabetized differently under your system from as one word rather than it would be as two words.
Yeah, speaking of Northampton, that's up in the course of the northeastern section of the state, what's come called the Black Belt of North Carolina, given the heavy population of at one time slaves up in that region. Then getting on up to the genuine northeast of the state, what I have heard called, and I added an entry in the gazetteer for the finger counties. This would be Chowan, Camden, mm-hmm. Pasquotank, Perquimans.
And earlier counties.
Exactly, yeah. And these counties essentially are like the fingers on
yeah,
the hand.
Yeah, I hadn't even thought of that.
Northeast part of the state.
And are they called the finger counties?
I've seen references to that. Uh-huh. And I took the liberty of adding that entry to it. So maybe it'll be more adopted as time
goes. That'll be your contribution to our way of speaking.
Right.
We're visiting with Michael Hill, who is the editor of the revised edition of the North Carolina Gazetteer. We'll continue our conversation with him after this short break.
You're listening to Who's Talking on News Talk 1360 WCHL with your host, D.G. Martin. And now, once again, here's D.G.
Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. Michael Hill is my guest. We're talking about North Carolina place names, funny place names. And Michael Hill is the compiler, editor of the and successor to his colleague William Powell, who put together the first edition. And as you pointed out, it's a William and Virginia Powell project.
That's right. That's right.
One of the things I wanted to talk to you about, Michael, is the little off-color, controversial names of places,
sure.
And what you do about it. And I think the one that's the hardest to talk about is the S word, SH word, four-letter word, britches.
Yeah.
Creek.
Well, it's the entry a lot of people show an interest in. When the original edition came out, Bill Powell talked to the Friends of the Library in Alamance County. And in doing that, he said, and I've seen the transcript of his talk, the book even includes some four-letter Anglo-Saxon words, not love or kind. So he was hinting to that group about the inclusion of some terms like that. And this word, the S word, Bridges Creek, that term was applied to a creek in Buncombe County, up my way, where my roots are, where Tradition has it that back in the early settlement period, a settler witnessed an Indian washing his pants in a creek. This Indian had had an accident in his pants, according to the word derivation that Bill dug up in the original edition. That reminds me of an entry down in the eastern part of the state in Beaufort County for Turnagain Creek. That one is about a confrontation between a European settler and an Indian, where they exchanged words. They were on opposite sides of the creek. The white man is insulted by the Indian, and the Indian begins to sulk away. The white man says to him, "Turn again." He turns again, and the white man shoots and kills the Indian. The creek became known as Turnagain
Creek. Wow, awful name. The other controversial thing in terms of looking back at parts of our history that we're not as proud of as we are of other parts of our history were the use in a number of places of the N-word to describe mountains and places.
Yes.
And how did Professor Powell deal with this, and then how did you deal with it?
Well, I debated, you know, whether to excise those words. I did not feel comfortable in doing that. They're part of the history of North Carolina. They're part of the history of this book. Since the original edition appeared in 2003, the state legislature passed a law drawing upon the original gazetteer, listing these eight place names and directing counties to begin moves to change those place names. And so I document those changes. I believe five of the eight have been changed.
Some of the changes directed by the legislature have been made and some haven't, and you
exactly.
just kind of have to
exactly.
hope that will
Mount
be done.
Mount Jefferson, for example, used to have the
up N-word. In Ashe County.
Yeah, a N-word applied to it. When it became a part of the state park system, it took the new name Mount Jefferson.
Well, this was interesting to me that you said the legislature, which certainly would have full authority as the sovereign entity to change any name itself, instead of doing it, it directed local entities to
exactly.
do it. Wow, that's kind of crazy, isn't it?
Well, the legislature, in fact, does not have the final authority on this. There is a federal name registry board where people go to change the names. I assisted citizens in Union County in changing the name of N Head Creek some years ago to Salem Creek. And there is a newly established board, which I've been made a member, to have a state name registry, and a professor of geography at UNC Charlotte.
You mean to tell me that the state of North Carolina can't unilaterally change the name of a feature or a town, or doesn't it ultimately have the authority to give names to places in North Carolina?
To my knowledge, that has not been the common practice. It's been a federal authority that has done that until recently. There is a newly established board which will take on that authority, but that board still will advise the federal board. That is the board of which I've been made mm-hmm. a member, headed by a professor of geography at UNC Charlotte, will advise the federal government.
It's an interesting thing, and maybe we ought to have to come back because you got my curiosity up, but there have been a number of towns and cities in North Carolina that do change their names.
Oh, yeah. The best known one is probably Eden. Eden was originally three small communities. You can help me.
Spray.
Something. That happened in the 1960s. Another one, unusual one locally, and Bill Powell had a hand in this, is Hillsborough, the spelling of the name of Hillsborough. Anyone who's been around here a goodly while in Orange County knows that Hillsborough dropped the UGH for many years.
Like Pittsburgh.
Yeah, and like Greensboro. But those interested in history and interested in tradition and preserving tradition, and that included Bill Powell, back in the 50s and 60s, instigated to have the UGH restored to Hillsborough, and so that's the case today.
Well, how did they do it then? Who did it? Did they just have the town do it? We don't know. We'll have to, an interesting project. Draper, Leakesville, and Spray.
There you go.
I had to refer to this classic book,
in
the
fact,
second edition, the North Carolina Gazetteer, of which you're the
editor. And this all comes about because of the mills up there and the use of the waterways and powering the mills. There's also a community up there called Splashy.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Well, one of the nice things that about your book is that there are some pronunciation guides. For instance, a lot of newcomers don't, when they see B-E-A-U-F-U-R-T, and they say Beaufort is the way they say it in South Carolina. Well, the Gazetteer instructs you about how
to say that. We provided a few of those. Bill had some of those in the original edition. Mm-hmm. And some of the names that I thought were the most easily or most often confused, I added. I noted in your column, you begged for one to be added about Salisbury. One of the names...
And Concord.
And Concord.
Because I listen to the radio and these wonderful young reporters come down and they say, in Salisbury, yeah, near Concord. And you just know that somebody needs to help them. And I wish you'd given them more help.
My way in the western part of the state, the place name that's of most interest to me is the local pronunciations of Rutherfordton.
Yeah, and tell me about that.
Well,
how do they say it up there?
Because of the difficulty in pronouncing that name, that people tend to say Rutherfordton.
Rutherfordton, yeah.
Yeah, putting some soft L's into the place name pronunciation.
Not correct, but locally, but yeah, more used maybe than
another name in Asheville is Leicester Highway. A lot of folks say Leicester. And that, of course, takes the British spelling, Leicester. There's a community called
right,
Leicester.
Right, right, right.
Bascom-Lunsford, one of my heroes, the old Grand Old Man of the Mountains, folk music promoter. He was from Leicester. But a lot of folks say Leicester.
I think we all make mistakes, and I guess we have to celebrate our mistakes. And then if we want them corrected, the place to go is the Gazetteer, second edition, edited by Michael Hill, who's been our guest. So we thank you, Michael Hill. We thank your colleagues.
Yeah, if folks would like to learn more about it, I'll be giving a lecture on July the 24th at Wilson Library. It's a Saturday morning, and I'd welcome folks to join me there.
More information about that on our website. Keep a lookout for the meeting of the Cummings Map Society, a chance to catch up and learn more about the North Carolina Gazetteer second edition from Michael Hill. Michael, thanks very much. Thanks to all y'all for listening. This has been Who's Talking. I'll be right back here soon.